Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, this is your Soul Sisters podcast. It's a new year. It's a new us.
Yes.
By new us, I mean same hosts, Jesse and
Dara.
But we're feeling newly invigorated and honored and grateful to have this podcast. We started it a couple of years ago because we had just a general sense that there was this kind of untapped opportunity to put a spotlight on women artists in particular in the music industry who had inspiring stories for fans and for other artists. And we just wanted to be the home to collect and record those. Mm-hmm. And it's just felt increasingly vital, especially right now more than ever, to have a platform that is for the lifting up and telling of women's stories in the entertainment industry and in our personal lives. And just, I'm very grateful to be here with you, Dee.
I'm so grateful to be here with you. And I think you said it beautifully. The podcast has evolved as the world has been changing. Mm-hmm. And we've had different kind of like evolutions within ourselves regarding the podcast and how, what's its, you know, purpose or mission and what do we want to achieve with it. And, you know, my sort of perspective has always kind of been more of the inside baseball. Let's hear about the industry. Let's hear about, you know, what it's like to be a musician and you are a female.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken me longer than I think it's taken you to sort of see it in a way of like, this is a kind of more urgent sort of platform that we have to use where mm-hmm. we can really address these issues in a more explicit way.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yes, you are a woman musician, so let's actually talk about that more. And I think I was so emotional for the Golden Globes in a way that shocked me because I don't normally respond to these kinds of things in that way. The idea that everyone would be wearing black, I was like, oh, that's kind of silly. And I was so moved the entire night.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think part of the difference was with the Golden Globes versus when we've attempted these things in the past? It felt like it was more than just a token. You know? Like it really seemed to mean something to people. It wasn't just a pin they put on their lapel and then continued to talk about the designer of the suit.
Right.
The Time's Up and the wearing black and the talking about these issues was the point of the night.
It was.
It was using that award show as a platform to talk about things that are bigger than awards.
Right. The facade of celebrity and the sort of fakeness that goes along with that
mm-hmm.
inherently was like almost stripped away. And these were women. These were just people.
Right.
And it was so impactful.
Yeah.
Oprah's everything.
Oprah was everything. Oprah 2020.
Although, please, God, no. Let her be remain.
This is a whole other topic.
That's a whole other topic. Fine.
Yes.
Oprah's everything.
I don't know that a non-celebrity could beat Trump at this point, but that's we can talk about it on another podcast. Yeah, that's my
okay. That's one
my,
take. We'll get
that's
to
my
that
pro
take
point
okay.
for Oprah 2020.
Sure.
There's so many obvious wonderful moments of the night. I think a very interesting moment of the night, which I want to talk to you about, was Natalie Portman.
Yes.
Because this was a moment that on its surface would appear to be something that I would immediately jump out of my chair and cheer for. I felt some discomfort in that moment that was unexpected for me. And it made me really think about what the point of all of this is. And I'm so glad she did it because it did bring me to a realization that I have been excited to share with people, which is, you know, she was announcing she was announcing the Best Director category at the Golden Globes with Ron Howard. And
immediately after following Oprah's.
Yeah, which was already tough.
Tough, but everyone's still swelling from that.
Yes, everyone's feeling so great. Oprah brought everyone in the room to their feet. And then Natalie Portman and Ron Howard come out to announce Best Director. And in announcing the nominees, Natalie Portman says, "Here are the all-male nominees." Right. Then they read the names of the nominees and they cut to all the men who are nominated. And they all look rather sheepish and uncomfortable and shifting in their seat. And she has immediately made that moment less celebratory and more. And here's an example of the problem that we're talking about tonight. And so I was so glad she called it out, because we need more women directors. Like,
right,
you and I are both
is,
women directors,
right.
That could not be
more true
and more relevant and important to us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I respect the tradition of an awards show, and that these men have worked very hard. And as far as I know, they have not abused or assaulted anybody. And, you know, they deserve to enjoy their nomination and have their moment of expectancy. They're waiting to find out if they just won the Golden Globe. And she took that moment away from them. So those were my conflicted feelings in that moment. I felt very uncomfortable. I was glad she said it, but I was a little bit like, was that the right moment? And I thought about it all night. And before I went to bed, what I decided was, what she did is actually the most important thing that happened that night, because this is where real change is going to happen, is when we do things that are uncomfortable, that sacrifice things that are nice and things that are easy, and that ask even those who are quote unquote innocent or unimplicated or our allies to sacrifice something for this greater moment, because that is what a revolution looks like. It affects everybody. Everyone has to step up, and everyone is going to lose a little bit in order to get to a better place. And so
Amen.
That was the biggest moment for
That's
me.
That's fantastic. Before the podcast, we were talking, and I didn't want you to tell me how you ultimately landed. And so I didn't know if you were going to, at the end of that story, say, so I didn't feel it was appropriate.
Right.
And I was going to say to you, what I am inspired by constantly by you is your... is that sense that you have, is that we do need to go this extra mile, which might not be appropriate in a different context or in a different season or era,
mm-hmm.
but there are ways that we need to make people uncomfortable, and that's what's going to change things.
Right.
And I think that I too had completely conflicting feelings. I was like, fuck yeah. And then I was like, oh, this is bad. But you're right. And I think having come at that from such a thoughtful, like long ruminating and thoughtful place, and saying like, this is what it needs to look like,
yeah,
to make change, I think, because I didn't think about the fact that Greta wasn't nominated or
right.
that no woman was nominated.
Lady
she
Bird
said it, it
won.
Did. Well, Lady Bird won,
and
it wasn't
not even nominated.
And not nominated for screenwriting, whatever. But it didn't really cross my mind until she said it, and then I was like, what the?
Right.
You know, and it did make everyone uncomfortable, and I think what you said is so important. I think in any realm that we are in a place of fear and anxiety and discomfort and like just worried about our world, what needs to happen is sacrifice that will make us uncomfortable. And that
yes.
means with technology, that means with with just like speaking up in a time that might feel weird.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard realization. It's a
right.
hard, it's a really hard thing. Talking,
but,
you know.
But great change will not come from making easy choices,
right.
you know.
And we've come to this, I have, in this new year, and especially in these past couple days, I've had this new sense of like, let's go all in a way where this jazz artist, Camila Mesa, who we're mm-hmm. privileged to have on the podcast today, I would normally want to just go all in on the music because there's so many questions I have. I love talking about that stuff.
Right.
But I recognize.
How did you learn? When did you learn? What's a jazz scene in Chile? I know.
Yeah,
lots
you know,
of normal
so
questions,
questions
we would ask on this podcast.
Right. And we have in the past, and it's been great. But I think that it's time to... you know, and to explicitly with our guests and our listeners to, you know, say we're going to really want to address these things in an explicit way.
Yeah. And I just want to note also on this podcast, we plan on opening up the kinds of guests that we're booking. We're going to have different sorts of artists when they come our way. So just a note, it might not always be an explicit musician who's on the show. And also, this is something that we're navigating with the rest of the world, but maybe not always a female identifying guest. We might have gender non-binary or gender fluid guests on this show. But, you know, the mission of the show, which is to spotlight stories that often go untold, will still be reflected in the guests that join us on the show.
Love it.
So
happy to be here with you
2018.
Today. 2018. Let's do it.
It's going to be big, bold, uncomfortable things. And we're all in it together, guys. And it's all going to bring us to a better place. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, without further ado, after all of that, Camila Meza.
Okay, Camila Meza, welcome to Soul Sisters. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, sisters.
We were trying to remember, I was trying to remember, if we were at the New School at the same time. Mm. You went to the New School for Jazz. Yep. I was there around 2007, 2008.
We
didn't overlap.
No, because I got there at 2009.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I went there for 4 years. But okay. So then you graduated on 2008?
I stopped going in 2009.
Stopped going? Yeah.
But you didn't overlap in 2009?
No.
No, okay. I don't think so. Yeah. Not really.
Okay.
Yeah, but we have friends in common.
We have many friends in common, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So did you come here to go to school?
Mm. Yes.
If you moved from Chile to go to school at the New School.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, basically, because I have loved jazz for so long and I never really knew what it was like, I made this trip in 2008, 1 year before moving, without any kind of ambition of I want to move there. No, just checking it out and going to the jazz clubs and checking out the music, the art scene and everything. And that month, it was in July 2018, it was revelatory that okay, you have to be here, you know?
Yeah.
So then quickly after I got back to Chile, I applied long distance recording, blah, 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 to the New School. And then in 4 months, it changed my life completely. So, but I've never regretted, I guess. There's moments where I'm like, what am I doing here? But
no, regrets are a wasted emotion. Well, I was just going to say, before we go totally back, just to talk about, I feel like there are two reasons why you're on the show today, which one is that you guys have connections and Dara has seen you and filmed you before and you've been on her radar. But also because Dara reached out to the Winter Jazz Fest.
So, I wasn't aware of the Winter Jazz Fest. And when I discovered that this was coming on New York scene, this is posting tomorrow. So Wednesday, the 10th through the 17th, Winter Jazz Fest, 130 groups, 600 musicians all over the city. Mm. Jazz is coming. And
jazz is coming
as if it weren't always here, all over in little pockets and corners. But I was very excited to discover that the theme of Jazz Fest this year is beautifully, explicitly laid out as being promoting social justice, gender equality, immigration rights, and so that was fascinating, and there are panel discussions about it, and a real emphasis on bringing in women jazz musicians in a way that, sadly, is unusual.
Mm. So, they said that they made an explicit effort to book women jazz artists this year.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of generating through the music and through this amazing community getting together to just show their art, to generate also a conversation towards so many topics that today we're all constantly sort of thinking about.
Right.
You know?
Does it feel new for the jazz community to be having this kind of role in a conversation?
Well, honestly, I feel that in the history of jazz music, there's always been you know, at least part of that community that has always been really revolutionary, really like in a sense calling for things that the society needs to rethink or mm-hmm. that we need to pay attention to. I mean, if you learn from where this music comes from, I mean, it is the sound of resistance. Mm-hmm. It is the sound of struggle. It is the sound of community and gathering together to overcome, you know? So in that sense, I feel that in a way, no. The yeah. answer is no, because it's been forever. But today it feels way more present than 10 years ago.
But at the same time, to a certain extent, women have kind of been left behind in that. Jazz has also become notorious for its treatment of women musicians and women as an audience. So there's some kind of disconnect there that's also happened, which we were talking about before you came in, that I've just been surprised to learn all of this kind of just recently for me, this kind of pervasive misogyny in jazz. Not that I'm surprised, because as Dara pointed out, like, it's everywhere, so of course it's in jazz too, but just because I do tend to think of jazz as being a more progressive art form and therefore assumed that that would touch the way it treated all of its participants more than apparently it has.
Yeah, well, that's it. It is definitely a topic, you know, like women in jazz. It is actually, it's been an organization for a long time, sort of to give voice and space, you know, to women. Also like taking to back, like looking back to history. It is kind of interesting why the prominent jazz musicians have always been men. Right. I do make the sort of analogy with the stage of women in all fields at those times. You know, like if you think of everything, even science and like,
sure, right.
You know, we have always been struggling, you know, to like find that space and that also that the feeling that you can just come in to a group and feel the same, you know, like it's still in the works, basically, right. You know?
Yeah.
Personally,
yeah.
And this, maybe it's a, I would love to discuss this.
Yeah.
Because personally, I've always had an issue to find my place in a society or whatever, just because I'm women.
Uh-huh.
You know? So in that sense, like, I have this sort of like paradox to be considered for instance, in the lineup lines. Just because I'm women.
Right, right.
You know, it's weird.
I have a quote I wanted to read about that from Norma Carson.
Okay.
Who was a trumpeter, and she had an all-female band during World War II when all the men went off to war. She says, I've never found it an advantage to be a girl. If a trumpet player is wanted for a job and somebody suggests me, they'll say, what, a chick? And put me down without even hearing me. I don't want to be a girl musician. I just want to be a musician. And so I'm curious, the way that you just described that feeling is I was wondering, there's this tension between the need for us to discuss this right now, because it still is a huge thing, and we need to see all of the art through this prism, but at the same time, it fights with the idea of wanting to talk about the art, and you do have a new album coming out, and you are, so I understand that, and so that is part of how you feel right now, is that, like, there's this balance that needs to happen?
Well, I mean, I want to see a society where we don't necessarily have to classify ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
In a way, it's part of our healing process to do so right now, because we have to address things, you know, that are being unfair, that are being, you know, and because we haven't addressed them, we get into this sort of like status quo of, you know, of like oh yeah, it's normal that there's like 30 male musicians and one female musician, you know?
Right.
You know, that's how it is. But maybe not. Let's talk about it, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
Like, and in that sense, I totally, you know, I'm with this conversation. Absolutely, you know? It's time to wake up.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if we spoke to men about this. If men were on a podcast or men were doing whatever interviews they were doing, and they should be asked this as well. I mean,
are you advocating to have our first man on a podcast? I don't know if I'm ready.
A different podcast.
Yeah.
I guess that would make me sort of want to ask you the question. It's sort of old news by now, but it's coming back around with this Jazz Fest, and we're sort of new to this idea of the Robert Glasper musical clitoris saga, we'll say, where he, in an interview, said that women are more, like, they're not interested in listening to solos, and they sort of just want to feel the groove, and that's, like, just classifying them in that sort of narrow way. And there was this big backlash, and then Sasha Berliner, a vibraphone player who's at the New School now, right?
Yeah.
Wrote a long, extensive, you know, thing about the pervasive misogyny and inappropriate treatment. I don't know if you experienced your experience at the New School. I'd be curious how you felt. But did you feel that there was an appropriate level of kind of like pointing fingers and feeling about that, you know, comment? Or do you feel like it was a little bit like, okay, if we handle this a little bit differently. I don't know. What did you have a reaction?
Yeah, well, it was like definitely a topic within the jazz community, you know, because, it's particularly sensitive at this time of, you know, our, you know, mindset to be talking that way about like how women perceive music. When you know that, like, there's, like, so much more, first, and you're stigmatizing women in a very particular way, and, you know, like, women basically cannot be intellectual, or women cannot, you know, cannot, like, perceive music. He said something about, like, women don't like solos or
right.
something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm a woman. I love solos. So, like, there's something that's not broad enough, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I'm sure that, like, I mean, I think Robert Glasper has worked with so many female musicians. I'm sure that, like, he understands better, you know?
Right.
That it's not, you know. But I, you know, talking about, like, the bigger picture, it's true that like it's been so, like jazz has been like historically male dominated, that like it has always been you know, a little more difficult for women to get to the place where men you know hold in this group of musicians, you know.
Mm-hmm. I imagine it's like any profession or anything where the better you are, like you have to go that extra 110% in order to prove yourself.
Yeah. If there's one thing that like, cause I've had conversations with like female young students and they do ask me stuff like this, you know, and I have to be honest with them and I have to tell them that you have to do twice as better.
So that was your experience? That's been your experience?
Like, yeah, like, I basically, like, I have to, first of all, you have to trust yourself, like, as a, you know? Yeah, like, basically, because we, you know, you have to go kind of, like, get over the I'm not good enough thing, you know?
Yeah.
But you have to feel good enough. You have to feel like I am good enough.
And that is also
But even if you don't.
Yeah.
Right, faking it. Okay.
Or like working towards it, you know? And like, I mean, it's so much pressure because it's that. And also that like you come into this society, I'm calling them, it's a society, but
right,
like
so this world.
This world with the doubt of like, you know, you come into a jam session, oh, a woman playing guitar? what can she do? Or like a woman playing, you know? So you come in with the negative, like, she can't play.
Right.
So you have to show, like, double, you know, that, like... So it's, I mean, honestly, it's, like, a lot of work to be a woman.
Did you notice a shift when you would start, like, the better and better you got, and the more the your reputation sort of preceded you, like, your treatment, the way that people would...
Totally. And we work so hard for just that, like to find, to be able to come into a group and feel that you are respected, you know, that like you're not like, look, I mean, and I'm sure that this happens everywhere, you know, like to, you have to prove yourself.
Right? Yeah. Who have your biggest allies been to help you feel like you were being seen just as a musician?
Well,
like, have you had pivotal teachers or fellow musicians?
Totally.
Or,
In that sense, you know, like, it's dichotomal. No. Mm-hmm. I use these words because I translate them from Spanish, and then I don't know if they
were.
Yeah.
We know what you mean.
Yeah. Because, obviously, I've you know, connected in a super, like, amazing way with my fellow musicians, you know, like, male and female.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it creates this it's hard to generalize, right? Like, because some of, like, my older, like, my mentors are men that have, like, pushed me to, you know, like, do things that, like, I would, you know? I wouldn't be able to, you know, like, someone that gave me so much opportunity to, like, show me to the jazz scene was a pianist called Aaron Goldberg. Okay. He, like, helped me record my first album, then, like, you know, presented me to other, like, booking agents and all you know, sort of, sort of like a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I have so many, basically I've created, like, a family, you know, in New York and with the musicians that I play with. And yeah, I mean, it's, in that sense, it's sort of, it's brought to, like, you know, who has helped me and, like.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Taking it back just a little bit, I'm curious because you started out in Chile, tell me if this is correct, really admiring rock musicians, like classic rock, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, those were your idols.
Yeah.
And then
everybody's.
Yeah. And then you kind of, your world exploded when you discovered jazz and certain jazz guitarists.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what the difference, what it was that like excited you, and how would you describe that feeling of going from
about
like
jazz or
virtuosic rock, which is like really exciting, soloing in, as well in a very different way. And then you were like, oh my God, but there's this. Like, what is it that excites you about the jazz?
That's a good question. I think that, I got into rock music. It was like really like liberating for me. Like as a teenager, I think like, you know, that music really like speaks for your like rebellion and your like, you know, all those feelings. And I was really, really attracted also to, you know, the rock guitar playing and the freedom and the blues that was in it. And then, you know, someone like Jimi Hendrix, he also sort of like started shifting he helped, like, sort of gave me a little bit of, like, a new window into more sounds, because he was using some, like, more, like, advanced harmonies kind of vibe, you know? Like, tensions and tensions. That's like, it's like colors of chords that are more like in the jazz harmony. And then I was like, oh, this sounds so good. And then, like, then when I discovered, like, that, like, improvisation, you know, like, that there was this world of jazz that, like, people would improvise. Oh, my God, that blew my mind, because that was exactly what I was looking for. Like, in Chile, I never, like, really was confronted with, you know, like, improvisation so much. But it was something that I knew that, like, I needed to find somewhere. I didn't know how to call it or anything, you know, but, like, I would get tired of playing the same thing all over again. So, like, I need to, like, find music that would be different every time, you know?
Yeah,
that's how, like, when I found jazz, was like, yeah.
And that was it. No looking back?
Well, actually, it's interesting because from this whole, like, experience with jazz music, I've been able to kind of, like, also start grabbing, like, this other influences that, like, you know, are also close to my heart from the past, and sort of make, like, my own, like, crazy thing, you know, mixed up, you know?
Yeah.
So it I consider it a kind of jazz, but it also could sound very, you know, I don't know what kind of music.
Right. Well,
you
what
play.
Is the definition of jazz in a sense when you want to say if there's an improvisational element, which what's the difference with solo? Like if there's a rock solo, that's not jazz. But like when you bring improvisational elements into something, but bring other like rock elements or folk or pop or something like. Is that still, I mean, it's all genre defining
and trying to put things on a label,
but.
Yeah, we deal a lot with that question.
Right.
What is jazz?
What is, right. Today, because it's so many things. And this festival especially is interesting to see the wide range of things that are happening.
Oh, yeah. And I personally love that, you know, sort of generosity of the genre, if you call it, to, you know, just include all this extremely creative music, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And your second album, I believe it was, you had, you, like, played some Zeppelin covers or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You have experimented with actually, like, integrating that.
Totally,
in a very,
But
now you're working with an orchestra.
Yeah.
So the Nectar Orchestra.
The Nectar
Tell
Orchestra.
Tell us about that experience.
That's my new project. And we recorded last year. So it's like we're going to release this year. And I'll have news very soon about all the details, I think. It's going to be really good, actually.
We got a sneak of it, and it is amazing.
Really?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's incredible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's beautiful.
I'm so excited about it. It sort of, like, develops further, like, my sound with the inclusion of a string quartet, which I've always loved. It kind of enhances so much, like, my singing and my playing. It's so inspiring. Like, the band itself, it's such a great platform for me for, like, inspiration and expression. And, yeah, like, we recorded last year, and it's a really awesome group of people, too. It's, like...
That's the best.
Yeah. It's I'm collaborating with a really close friend, Noam Weisenberg. He wrote the string arrangements. And we have Eden Ladin on piano, who's also a very close friend, and Keita Ogawa, an amazing Japanese percussionist. And a awesome. String quartet. And we're opening for Buika!
Amazing. On Friday. Yes.
Yeah,
this Friday at Town Hall. Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're still in the hustle and the grind as a working jazz artist in New York? Or do you...
Always.
Yeah.
It never stops.
Does it feel any different right now? Like where you are in your career? Is there any more breathing room?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think it's more of like a mindset.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And
but what do you think made that difference for you?
Experience.
Okay.
You know? Like, I think time is, like, the best.
Right.
The best ever.
Like
the best
knowing
teacher.
Knowing that more gigs will come and that...
Knowing that I feel that every little thing you do counts.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're in demand as as a side woman.
let's change the
Did people say that?
We're saying it now. Yeah.
Side woman, you play a ton with other people.
Yeah.
And you're a band leader, and now you're a band leader of an orchestra as well, which is just, I mean, the sort of resume and the what you've done keeps growing. So I imagine like the opportunities are just.
Yeah,
all over.
Yeah, I think. What I said, like from the very beginning when I came here, we all have like our struggle stories from our first years in New York. I'm sure we can like develop that. But like, playing like little gigs and just go one like asking like, do you need music here? To like, you know, asking a better musician, hey, I would love to play a session with you. You know, like. All those things kind of like little by little, they start creating like your like this new world where you can, you know, find community, which I think it's one of the most important things when, especially when you come from, you know, like the bottom of the world and like come here to New York, know nobody.
Uh-huh. Did you not know anybody?
Actually, the only person I knew was, this friend of a friend of my sister.
Okay.
That he became one of my best friends.
Yeah, nice.
And I stayed with him at his apartment for my first semester. Without him, I would have gone back to Chile. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. And then, that's it.
Okay.
But when you come to jazz school and you're studying jazz guitar, I imagine that at least at the beginning, you're just like, you're so focused. Like, you're the number of hours you practice, probably still now, but like, you know,
you don't have time for anybody anyway.
Right, kind of. I mean, the experience that I had at the New School was, you know, the serious people were so serious. And that they lived in the practice room, which there were never enough of, but they were always always there. It's jazz is just such a, like, it's like a boys club in a way, but it's a club of like such an intellectual high level of technical, you know, demands that if you're part of that, then you're just like in this club, I feel like, in a way. Is that fair to say?
You know, this like club.
You've reached a level of proficiency where you are now like an in-demand player, and people know that like your level of skill is at this high, high level, and it's just not an easy thing to achieve.
Well, yeah, it takes so many hours. I think you have to love it so much.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you just quit. Because, it does take, like, so much focus, as you said. And there's also, like, some kind of responsibility to your instrument, too, you know? Like, I was thinking that because I sort of, like, didn't practice too much for the Christmas, whatever, New Year's. And then I started feeling like this thing inside of me, like almost like I haven't gone to church vibe. You know? I'm not religious.
Yeah.
Total guilt. Yeah. Like,
what's a lot? Then, what's a good feeling?
You know, at this point of my life, it kind of changes because I am also like constantly learning like music for this gig. And so those count as practice hours. But like if I don't have anything else to do, I think at least two, I feel like, okay, now I can watch a movie.
Yeah. I'm curious to know what you both think the major keys to beating back the boys club of jazz are, because I feel like jazz is different than other parts of the music industry.
Yeah.
Like we've talked to artists on here who said like, you know, getting to the people who control the playlists on Spotify, for example, you know, or like the labels are. But with jazz, do you feel like it's a lot more about like bookings and like where would it really make a big impact to open it up more to women?
Oh, it's a good question. And I think, I don't know where I was reading this, but there was this questioning like, oh, how many women have, been on this like 50 best CDs of 2017 or something like that?
Yeah.
You know? And then they started like realizing that like, okay, but how many women jazz critics are there?
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you go into if you go into this, like in the deep structure of the way that like our society is built, how are you going to attack the top if you actually don't have right. women like listening to, you mm-hmm. know, and mm-hmm. reviewing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So,
and that probably extends to bookers. It's like all of
exactly.
Yeah, but that's a really interesting point. We rarely, if ever, have talked about that on this show,
critics.
Especially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like journalists, the people that are writing about the music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because that is often people's means of discovery.
Right, absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
Maybe more with jazz than other forms of music.
That fewer female?
No, just that that means of discovery, of like reading about jazz to then discover artists, or
I don't know.
Like recommendations of shows you should go to. I don't know.
Maybe. I found it interesting that you're so often called a triple threat, which is amazing because you certainly are. You're a quadruple threat.
Singer, songwriter, guitarist.
Guitarist, right.
Okay.
But, you know, what? I don't find that phrase used very... You know, it's a musical theater phrase you think of typically, like singer, dancer, actor, whatever.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, right.
But I find it interesting that you... The fact that you play guitar and also sing and also write is like... Wow. You know what I mean? And it is because, and I don't know if this is fair to say, but that jazz guitar and like the jazz kind of compositions and arranging that you're doing is a different animal. And it's not just like, oh, let me just add some lyrics. And it's a different thing than a singer-songwriter.
Mm.
But at the same time, it feels funny to call it a triple threat, singer-songwriter, guitar player. Do you ever have you ever heard a man be, you know, referred to that way?
Good question.
Does that ring true to you?
To call a man a triple threat like that? I'm feeling shames because I called one of our recent guests a triple threat for being a singer-songwriter producer. So now I'm wondering if I use it gendered
no,
way.
I think that...
No, which is fine. I'm thinking now.
I mean, I'm sure it's a wonderful thing to say. There's nothing wrong with it, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. It's like, wow, a woman who can do more than one thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And also, but think about the rock world.
Touché.
Think about the rock world. You never would call a singer, like someone who writes and does all those things.
Yeah, I guess probably it's like in this jazz world that we're talking about, there's not so many reference of women guitar player, singer, blah blah.
It's not such a common thing.
No, not at all.
Why do you think that is?
Well, that's I would ask myself from like when I picked the electric guitar, why there's like no female guitar players? Why aren't like my girls playing guitar with me? You know, and this is anecdotal and kind of like relates with what we're saying. But like at that moment, you know, I was playing rock and everything, and they would like the compliment would be like, "Wow, you play like a man," and not only that, I would feel good about it.
Right.
You know?
That shit is
Check
totally
that
internalized.
Out.
It's so crazy. Yeah.
It is crazy. I mean.
But of course you would feel good about it, but it's also, and also probably, what was that, 10 years? That was a long time ago now.
15, probably.
That our consciousness wasn't tuned into, like, say, wait, that's not a cool thing to say. Be like, awesome, thank you.
Well, it's like, just grow like a girl was the worst insult
totally.
In the world.
Yeah.
But I like these questionings, you know? I like that we are in this sort of like, state of mind where we are actually like rethinking everything.
Well, because there's so I don't think we are being dramatic when we examine what that language does.
Exactly.
Because I do think that it has a big impact. Because as a
young
child, you make very simple connections in your mind, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
yes,
man, good, girl, bad. Like, that's what you're understanding from these phrases.
Exactly. Yeah. So the language is the absolutely the first thing that we need to review.
One good example from... Let's start there. It's so hard. It's hard. I was going to say an example of from when I was in a rock band, Parlor Tricks, and it was three women singing harmonies up front and three guys playing in the back. And we would be a little press write-up promoting a show that we had coming up, and it would say, electric, say, like, rock, like, chaotic rock, like, you know, raucous party time rock, Electric Six with opener female trio,
right,
parlor mm-hmm. tricks. So like not describing the quality of our music, what kind of music is it, but just the fact that we're female is a characteristic enough as like a you know.
Did you guys ever like debate the makeup of your band?
Oh, well, and that's like, why we changed the name in a big way.
Yeah, but just also kind of in what could be perceived as a gendered setup of three dudes playing the music and then the three girls up front in matching outfits singing.
I think that's a true sign of like the times in the past, like two and a half, three years. I think by now things would have been very different.
And what would have been different?
I think the way we dressed would have been different. Uh-huh. I think that we would have been more aware of that.
In the band.
What was the name of the band?
Parlor Tricks.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you know.
Now I'm totally connecting. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we wouldn't have added a fee. We were, you know, a lot of times we would say the reason that the six of us work so well touring and being together all the time was because of the 3-and-3 dynamic. We did have the male energy and the female energy, and we balanced each other out so well. So we kind of approached it from that kind of way as opposed to like, let's mix it up
more. Okay, but
it's
not exact math. Like, I wonder if now if Lily was putting a band together, if she would be very intentional about finding a woman to play
music
in the band.
I think collectively, the collective consciousness for this is like just been exploded open in the past even 2 years,
right.
3 years. And so I think it would be very
different
now. Or
like 1 year.
What, right, right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Whoa. But you will now be setting this example when the next generation younger than you, they're going to say, I want to play jazz guitar like Camila. Like, and that's
exactly.
So exciting. It's great.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
And then now you also did you add the singing and the songwriting in more recently, or was that something you were doing when you were playing rock?
Well, when I was playing rock guitar and I wasn't that part of my life, I didn't consider myself like a vocalist, you know? Like, actually, I had a band where I was I was the writer and I was kind of the leader of it, but I wouldn't sing. I had a singer, like, main lead singers, and I was just like lead singer, and I would just play guitar and background vocals. But I always like used my voice for, you know, musical purpose. Like, I would sing a song, you know, I kind of like, it was really sort of a very natural instrument for me.
Mm-hmm. It's always funny when singers don't know that they can sing, and then they're like, oh yeah,
I know.
It makes me crazy.
I feel like it's one of the first things I did in my conscious life is like check all of my talents to see what I could exploit.
Like, I'm not
going to
miss that.
I'm not just missing.
Yeah. And also, you're so on this new record, Ambar.
Yeah.
You're so expressive vocally. Not only like it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous album, but your vocals are so just, you have emotion behind it in a way that's like a performance, you know?
Whoa,
it's just beautiful.
Thanks.
What does Ambar mean?
Ambar is the Spanish for ember.
Ember, like a fire, like a burning ember.
Yes, it's actually, if I'm correct with the words, I think it's the resin, the resin that the the trees secrete.
Yeah,
when they're actually wounded, it's like a protective kind of liquid that they release to protect their. To heal.
I did not know that's what it did.
No. Me neither.
Wow.
Like, it was, you know, kind of like I called one of the songs from the album, I called Ambar, more related with the translation of my grandfather's last name, you know, because it was a song dedicated to him.
Yeah.
But then, and the song was about, like, healing process and, you know, like, overcoming and all that. And then I kind of, like, checked out the word and, like, and then I realized that it has all this, like, amazing healing properties and
it's
all
meant
that.
To be.
Yeah, it was super synchronic and magic.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's also great. I mean, jazz as an art form has, yes, been this mode of resistance and protest and all of these things, but lyrics, you can't compete with lyrics in being able to communicate ideas. And so, you know, you have a song, what is it? This Is Not America, for example. Pretty clear statement, you know, and you're able now exploring songwriting to have a whole nother level of expression.
Yeah, that's actually an arrangement of a song by David Bowie and Pat Metheny.
Ryan, did you know that?
No.
That's amazing.
So you didn't write that?
I didn't write that. No, we just did an arrangement of that song. We kind of found it and was like, whoa, we kind of need this right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is the album out? We don't have a date yet? Okay.
I'll post very soon. I think I have dates and like specifics in like literally this week.
Okay.
And it's super exciting stuff. So
super excited. Yeah. Are you playing stuff off that new record on Friday?
Definitely. Okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We'll be playing off of Ambar.
I wanted to ask if, as a kick-ass woman in jazz, if you could make a pledge to yourself for 2018.
A pledge?
What would it be?
I'm asking you to make one now on this show.
What is a pledge?
Promise.
Oh. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like something that you're going to hold yourself accountable for. Like personally, professionally.
We should all do that.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a great.
That's a really.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you to do it later. Oh, God. So you start thinking over it. And I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
And also because I kind of know what I have to do, but I'm like a little. I feel. Damn, am I pledging for this? Okay, I feel that like. Let me put my thoughts together. There's definitely like this feeling of like a mission or something that I have, that it is sort of like, I definitely feel that I can achieve it through music, but I also feel like I need to do more, you know? This is like what I've been feeling lately, you know? And and it actually has to do with like the big sort of humanistic issues of our society, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I do feel that I have to become, you know, like more outspoken about things that like I actually don't agree with, or things that I feel that are urgent, you know, like. Mm-hmm. And I do have like this like, ooh, like this, almost like a, I need to do something about this, you know. When we talk, we're talking about some of these issues, but also, I mean, when I think about like, even, you know, environment. Mm-hmm. When I think about like, my fellow, you know, my fellow people, you know, I want to be able to create like. Change for like literally, it sounds like it's cliche, but like literally I want us to do better, you know?
So you see trying to figure out how to do that through your art and also outside of your art.
I mean, I have asked myself, and I've tried to like, you know, sort of figured out maybe some ways of activism or you know, I've donated to the ACLU, I don't, or Earth Justice or whatever, but like, I feel like I need to do more.
Yeah.
That's my pledge.
Okay. That's a good one.
That. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you are, thank you so much for coming on the show and being so open and talking about this stuff with us. I mean, that's huge.
Thanks.
Yeah. I feel like you're already starting to embark on your pledge. Not to put too much importance on our little podcast, but to have these conversations and being someone who's now in the public eye, that people love your music and will listen to this and be inspired to maybe make that pledge for themselves. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And listen to the music. That's the thing, I think, is like it is important to come on here and talk about the things that we do, and your art is amazing. Mm-hmm. And we want to not that would go overlooked, but everyone should listen. Ambar, the last one, it was Traces.
Traces.
Traces. That's out now.
Yeah.
Get that. So
thank
and,
you.
And come
that.
To Jazz Fest. Everyone should come and
Winter
see you at Jazz Fest.
Winter
Jazz Fest.
There you go.
It's going to be amazing. What was the... Jazz is coming.
Jazz is coming.
Yeah. Winter is coming. Jazz is coming.
All right, Camila, thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's been fun.
You're beneath the moonlight. I can help you trace your way back home. I know you want to run fast. I know the way. Peace. somewhere else we can stay, as long as there's a wave that's taking us to the beauty.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.